making TV special.
Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means? It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
Girls, that's right. That's the latest from LCD Sound System from their 2010 record, This Is Happening. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is happening. This is the B-side episode 173 from MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the sites and show MediaMonarchy.com, as well as CyberspaceWar.com and FoodWorldOrder.com. And those are what we're going to go over here today. A quick word, Portland Radio Authority is under construction, getting us up to code with the fire marshal. So there's no live show today, so we're going to still record and broadcast from the home studios of MediaMonarchy.com. So having said all that, and speaking of drunk girls, let's jump to foodworldorder.com and get all our latest updates. First, from the Daily Mail, Lindsay Lohan ditches alcohol for healthy kombucha drink. She's been banned from drinking alcohol, but Lindsay Lohan is now getting her kicks from a new organic tea. After being forced by a judge to quit her wild ways, the troubled star has been spotted clutching healthy kombucha in place of vodka. And with its long list of benefits, including improving liver, blood, and digestive system, Lohan is sure to reap the rewards. The organic product can help people kick habits such as alcohol, coffee, and junk food by restoring healthy balance to the body. According to one founder, GT Dave of GT's Kombucha, who started that company as a teenager in his parents' kitchen, Lohan had better be careful not to consume too much since it is known to contain trace amounts of alcohol due to fermentation of its fruit ingredients. And some reviews claim the sweet tasting drink gives a mild euphoria on top of energizing and uplifting the body. So what started out as a tabloid story, as just your basic run-of-the-mill tabloid story, has now ballooned into something a bit larger. And again, for folks that know, I do work at a grocery store here in Portland, Oregon, and we sell GT's kombucha drinks. So I first started to get the word from my folks out there and my man, Zach, with a finger on the pulse, and I threw it back out on Facebook.com/Media Monarchy. Does anybody know about grocery stores pulling kombucha drinks? And in addition to some of the other comments from folks who say they're yucky, from the folks who know that it was, as far as the kombuchas disappearing from some Portland area stores, it was the distributor's call. They were worried about transporting it over state lines if it happened to be over the 0.5 alcohol limit. Why that means we have to pull it from the shelf, I don't know. I guess it would be illegal to sell it as non-alcoholic if it were over that limit. But I don't know why they have reason to believe that it suddenly is. Well, this story about Lindsay Lohan is what has caused this to get larger and what has now forced the hand on distributors and the grocery stores. They basically want distributors to guarantee the alcohol content. So, art imitates life, imitates pop culture, and affects your grocery shelf. Drunk girls indeed, my friends. Let's get some of the latest on foodworldorder.com. 92% of UK customers want GM labeling. All the breakdown on the abstract and the questions. This all comes from Food Freedom. And it gets into, again, it's got the questions asked of folks in the UK, of chains of grocery stores in the UK. 92% want GM labeling. Jimmy Dean, the singing sausage man, the storytelling country music artist who created America's number one selling breakfast sausage, has died at the age of 81. His death comes more than 25 years after he sold Jimmy Dean Sausage Company, which is today owned by the Sara Lee Corporation. FoodSafetyNews.com has a Q&A with Eric Schlosser, of course, the author of Fast Food Nation and one of the main consultants on Food Inc. Also from FoodSafetyNews.com, Portland Shellfish Company Incorporated recalls lobster in Oregon. Now, of course, that having no connection to the Gulf oil spill, but again, we're basically now in a position where we have to start thinking about the end of seafood as we know it. And that's how these stories are all connected. So regardless of whether we're talking about food and health issues on Food World Order or internet freedom and piracy and cyberspace war or everything else, everything is intimately connected. From allgov.com, the Federal Trade Commission cracks down on another dubious claim by Kellogg. The FTC is not letting up on the Kellogg Company, the world's largest cereal producer. Executives have agreed to stop marketing Rice Krispies as a food that boosts the immune system of children after FTC regulators filed a complaint over the misleading advertising. We expect more from a great American company than making dubious claims, not once, but twice, that its cereals improve children's health, said FTC Chairman John Leibowitz in a prepared statement. Next time, Kellogg needs to stop and think twice about the claims it's making before rolling out a new ad campaign so parents can make the best choices for their children. The action over Rice Krispies follows an earlier crackdown from the FTC involving Kellogg's claims that Frosted Mini-Wheats were clinically proven to improve kids' attentiveness. I'd never heard that. The company also has been sued by a consumer who contends Kellogg's natural fiber bars contain non-natural ingredients. And of course they do. So much of this, and again, I gotta thank my girlfriend for trying to help me eat better and pay more attention, but all the little nasty things that are hidden under the dubious claims and on the labels of natural. Natural's a generic word. We've recently gone over on Food World Order how even the word organic is being used and misused and abused and put into the name of the food, Newman's Own Organics, but not always being organic. Our last story on Food World Order is the heaviest. This from The Guardian. Food prices to rise by up to 40% over the next decade. A United Nations report warns food prices are set to rise as much as 40% over the coming decade amid growing demand from emerging markets and for biofuel production, according to a UN report which warns of rising hunger and food insecurity. Farm commodity prices have fallen from their record peaks of 2 years ago, but are set to pick up again and are unlikely to drop back to their average levels of the past decade, according to the annual joint report from Paris-based think tank, the OECD, and the UN Food and Agriculture Organization. Although the report sees production increasing to meet demand, it warns that recent price spikes and the economic crisis have contributed to a rise in hunger and food insecurity. About a billion people are now estimated to be undernourished. Fair trade campaigners said the predictions of sharply rising food prices provided a stark warning to international policymakers. Now, of course, our international policymakers know exactly what they're doing with food wars and resource wars, and it all ties in to the eugenics agenda. Our flashback here just goes back to April of this year. Global food reserve needed to stabilize prices. And we always now have to remember when we see all the stories about California throwing away enough food to fill 35 Staples centers a year. And then we see again the folks connected to the eugenics agenda talking about GM foods to feed the starving world. These things are engineered. That's why they want to give it to you. They never want to give you the good stuff. They want to give you the things they engineer, and of course they hide it all away then in their seed vaults in Svalbard, Norway. And again, it's all coming back to Bill Gates, Rockefeller, Kissinger, Agenda 21, eugenics, Codex Alimentarius, all those things, so much more. Stay tuned to foodworldorder.com for so much more on that and many other stories. Having said that, my friends, before we get into all the latest from cyberspacewar.com, we want to look at some of the latest media from around the alternative media sphere, if you will, or at least my favorites and the ones that I'm fortunate enough to be involved in or connected to. The latest episode of The New World Next Week, weekly video series between myself and James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. Two of the stories we're going to get to on upcoming episode 174. One of the stories we are going to hit in our cyberspace war updates coming up. But it's story number one, U.S. identifies vast riches of minerals in Afghanistan. And of course, no doubt you've heard that story. Number two, the SEC says the government destroyed documents regarding pre-9/11 put options. That's the insider trading pre-9/11. And our third story, IARPA wants to scan your YouTube clips for terror threats. More on that in just a few minutes. But the latest episode from CorbettReport.com, episode 133, Wars and Rumors of Wars. The puppets in charge of our government are beating the war drums once again as the string pullers at Bilderberg greenlight a strike on Iran. Is war in the cards? And if so, what the hell can we do to prevent it? This episode, for the most part, is made up from recent interviews with Zach Fillingham of geopoliticalmonitor.com and Gerald Salente of trendsresearch.com. Wars and rumors of wars, as I believe from the Bible. Also, the other latest, greatest videos from Corbett Report, the Sunday Update, going over GM woes, BP cover-up, and the continuing econo crash, and the latest installment in the Economics 101 series, Bob Chapman on SDRs and world currency, special drawing rights and world currency. So many levels to pay attention to. So many difficult things going on all around our eyes and ears. And we're all just trying to take it in. My man Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org. His latest episode is called Slaughtergate. I like that. And just a quick breakdown. This has kind of been an ongoing series as each show evolves into the next over the last few weeks from Clyde Lewis. It's always difficult to end a Ground Zero show with unfinished business. That's exactly what happened when he tried to explain the fictitious predictive programming called Blackjack. That, of course, we referenced his previous episode last week, Project Blackjack, a push from an invisible hand. While most of what he talked about sparked a flood of calls, there was one email he got that he couldn't figure out. The email talked about Pegasus, the white horse, and Cerberus, the three-headed dog, which stands guard at the gates of hell. The email was titled, White Vans, Pale Horse, Pegasus, Black Jackal, Cerberus. It talked about a website that explained there's some sick symbolism being used to suggest that the BP oil's ill disaster was a false flag on the U.S., and there was a link to another article called Cerberus, Guarding the Gates of Hell, DynCorp, Pegasus, BP, Goldman Sachs, Gulf Oil Disaster Planned. Coincidentally, this email came to Clyde while he was talking about the Denver airport, the New World Airport, and the arrival of the 7-ton statue of Anubis, the Egyptian god of death that now stands guard over the controversial airport. And it will for the remainder of the summer. We mentioned that on episode 173 of MediaMonarchy.com. So much, again, for you to research and get into. I wish I had time to go into all of these things in much greater detail. We are coming to another confluence here in just about a week, within the next week or so. It's the summer solstice. We, of course, know that's always a high pagan holidays for our occult leaders and misleaders. The G8-G20 coming up. Mass amounts of terror drills, which we're going to go over in depth on the upcoming episode. The anniversary, if you will, of Blackjack and its connection to military exercises and war games. And again, Clyde Lewis and I talked about this last year, Ardent Century and Blackjack. That episode, that flashback is linked up for you. Is it real? Is it a psyop? It's most definitely a psyop, whether it's real or not. But as they say, the real action is in the reaction. One last thing before we get to the latest cyberspace war updates. And speaking of Clyde Lewis, he does have another live event coming up next Friday, June 25th. I believe it's called Roswell and the Black Covenant. More on that on groundzeromedia.org. But Clyde Lewis also needs your help. He has rising medical costs. And if you can go to groundzeromedia.org and donate, that would help a whole hell of a lot. And of course, thanks to zeropointradio.com for providing all the Clyde Lewis Ground Zero archives. of course, now podcastable. You can subscribe. You can subscribe to Clyde's show, my show, James Corbett's show, and of course, their channel, ZeroPointRadio.com, also on 92.3 FM and 1670 AM in Casper, Wyoming. If you buy the shows, buy some archives, donate to Clyde, come out to the show if you're in the Portland metro area. It's at the Kenton Masonic Lodge. You can't beat it. You get tons of great information, and again, you can help support all the folks out there who bring you all of this alternative media that, if you find it useful and valuable, please spread the wealth around. Now let's move to cyberspacewar.com for all the latest attacks coming on inner space from outer space and vice versa all around the world. First, from Philip Shannon, writing for thedailybeast.com, of course, a New York Times bestseller, getting into the intelligence agencies, has been covering this story. And we made reference to it, I believe, last week on episode 173. But the updates get worse. WikiLeaks founder hunted by Pentagon over massive leak. Anxious that WikiLeaks may be on the verge of publishing a batch of secret State Department cables, investigators are desperately searching for founder Julian Assange. Philip Shannon reports. Plus, we also have links to Daniel Ellsberg and an interview with him saying that Assange is in danger. There are updates in this story on Assange's whereabouts, canceling an appearance in Vegas, and so on. Pentagon investigators are trying to determine the whereabouts of the Australian-born founder of the secretive website WikiLeaks for fears that he may be about to publish a huge cache of classified State Department cables that, if made public, could do serious damage to national security, government officials tell the Daily Beast. The officials acknowledge that even if they found the website founder, Julian Assange, it's not clear what they could do to block publication of the cables on WikiLeaks.org, which is nominally based on a server in Sweden and bills itself as a champion of whistleblowers. We'd like to know where he is. We'd like his cooperation in this, one U.S. official said. American officials said Pentagon investigators are convinced that Assange is in possession of at least some classified State Department cables leaked by a 22-year-old Army intelligence specialist, Bradley Manning of Potomac, Maryland, who is now in custody in Kuwait. And given the contents of the cables, the feds have good reason to be concerned. The updates coming from the Daily Beast, as well as Raw Story, Information Clearinghouse, and Threat Level. WikiLeaks founder has Afghan massacre video. And of course, if you need reminding, in addition to the numerous other things brought to us by WikiLeaks over the last few years, we had the Collateral murder release from just a couple of months ago. Just a week or so ago, we of course had the arrest of the aforementioned Bradley Manning as a possible source for mass amounts of info coming out on WikiLeaks.org. Raw Story has WikiLeaks confirming it has video of a U.S. massacre in Afghanistan. And on a different note, WikiLeaks inspired new media haven proposal passes in Icelandic parliament. We've discussed this. James Corbett has gone into better detail on this. And the last thing we'll note, 3 weeks after Bradley Manning's arrest, still no charges in WikiLeaks probe. That is from Threat Level. And of course, it's always interesting when someone is held indefinitely without ever being charged for a crime. But now we're going to jump to theatlantic.com for more on the coming cyber legislation. One of the main reasons we started Cyberspace War is that we are tracking the preparations and the threataganda surrounding an I-9/11 event, which they will use to shove an I-Patriot Act down all our ports, if you will. I should also mention that I believe yesterday marks the 1-year anniversary of cyberspacewar.com. But again, from The Atlantic, DHS cyber bill would codify executive emergency powers. At the beginning of the year, the chances that some sort of cybersecurity legislation would reach the president's desk by the end of 2010 were remote. But as of today, there are half dozen such bills circulating, and the sense of urgency is there thanks to a huge and largely unremarked upon public lobbying campaign by the defense industry that may or may not comport with the actual level of threat. I don't mean that as a snide aside. I just don't know how vulnerable we are at this moment. Today, the Senate Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee unveiled its legislation, which would create a Senate-confirmable cyber director in the executive office of the president and imbue him or her with significant emergency powers. The Protecting Cyberspace as a National Asset of 2010 is designed to bring together the disjointed efforts of multiple federal agencies and departments to prevent cyber theft, intrusions, and attacks across the federal government and the private sector, its chief author, Senator Joe Lieberman, said in a prepared statement. The bill would establish a clear organizational structure to lead federal efforts in safeguarding cyber networks, and it would build a public-private partnership to increase the preparedness and resiliency of those private critical infrastructure cyber networks upon which our way of life depends. The bill would create another Senate-confirmable position, the head of a new National Cybersecurity and Communications Center inside the Department of Homeland Stupidity. The new NCCC would be responsible for threat prevention and mitigation. It would develop risk-based standards for infrastructure with industry and oversee their implementation. Private entities whose power plants or grids or systems are considered vulnerable and critical could choose among a menu of standards. According to the legislation, the act would also create a responsible framework for giving the executive branch significant emergency power in the event of a major intrusion or threat. Quote, the president must notify Congress in advance about the threat and the emergency measures that will be taken to mitigate it. Any emergency measures imposed must be the least disruptive necessary to respond to the threat. The emergency measures will expire after 30 days unless the president orders an extension. The bill does not authorize any new surveillance authorities or permit the government to take over private networks. Industry will read that part of the bill very carefully, as well as civil libertarians. The White House believes it already has a lot of these powers, although it welcomes Congress' attempt to codify them. But the sense is that the National Security Staff doesn't want to create any new cyber infrastructure within the already overburdened executive office of the president and isn't keen on having the two top cyber positions be Senate confirmable. So the back and forth we see on this story is that some say they can, some say they can't. From ZDNet.com, Internet kill switch proposed for the U.S. Lawmakers question U.S. cybersecurity readiness. That's from Computer World. Experts warn of government's inability to respond to cyber threats. That's from CNN. Pentagon launches salvo in war to protect an army of 7 million. That's Fox News's way of saying it's a new war, a war of zeros and ones. From Federal Computer Week, cybersecurity bill would give president and DHS too much power, critics say. And last, from darkreading.com, cybersecurity not a command and control effort. And again, all we do when all these topics come up is reference the military's own documents, the Information Operations Roadmap, where they say they want to fight the net as if it were an enemy weapon system. That's it. From Danger Room, you've heard of DARPA, but have you heard of IARPA? That's the Intelligence Advanced Research Projects Agency, as opposed to Defense of DARPA, Intelligence of IARPA. IARPA wants to scan your YouTube clips for terror threats. This coming from Danger Room, your YouTube videos could soon be scanned and evaluated for terror threats thanks to a new project funded by the U.S. intelligence community that'll create a searchable warehouse of open source clips. IARPA, the spy agency's out there research arm, is behind the program called automated low-level analysis and description of diverse intelligence video, or, of course, Aladdin. The advent of cell phone cams and online video hubs means thousands of clips are uploaded every day, and of course the spooks want to watch them all as if they haven't already been. So hopefully they enjoy these clips from MediaMonarchy.com. Continuing from Danger Room. The advent of cell phone cams and online video hubs means thousands of clips are uploaded every day. And while the quality of UAV or spy cam feeds is relatively consistent, and the videos usually contain similar imagery, the unconstrained video clips produced by anyone who has a digital camera present a significant challenge. Uploaded videos contain such diverse scenes and situations, not to mention grainy images and sound, that it's much harder to prep algorithm for automated evaluation, and human analysts only have so much time for the eyes-on-video, ears-on-audio routine. In Aladdin, IARPA wants a boundless database of open-source video clips and the ability to search for the occurrence of specific events of interest. Once the system finds the relevant videos, it should be able to rapidly and automatically produce a textual English language recounting, describing the particular scene, actors, objects, and activities involved. Of course, despite the challenges of analyzing uploaded videos, spy agencies are probably already doing it. In 2008, the director of the Office of the Director of National Intelligence Open Source Center noted that, quote, YouTube carries some unique and honest-to-goodness intelligence. It sure does. And as long as we have it, we're going to use it. Our last post from cyberspacewar.com is a DEF CON ugly news purge list. DEF CON 617 for June 17th, Civilization, Sun, and a Stunning Interface. We're first going to hit the register.co.uk. In 2013, the Earth will be attacked from space, with one possible outcome being the mind-bogglingly severe disruption of our tech-centric way of life. The sun is waking up from a deep slumber, and then in the next few years, we expect to see much higher levels of solar activity, says Richard Fisher, head of NASA's Heliophysics Division. At the same time, our technological society has developed an unprecedented sensitivity to solar storms. Fisher's comments came during the run-up to last week's Space Weather Enterprise Forum 2010, at which scientists gathered to discuss how to prepare for massive solar storms set to strike the Earth in 2013. We know it's coming, but we don't know how bad it's going to be. That's what Fisher told the Daily Telegraph. It will disrupt communication devices such as satellites and car navigation, air travel, banking systems, our computers, everything that's electronic. It will cause major problems for the world. The Earth has been battered by solar storms before, but never has civilization been so vulnerable since it's now so dependent upon both electrical and electronic infrastructure. The headline of this article, NASA says civilization will end in 2013. Probably. And from NewScientist.com, asking the question, what's wrong with the sun? Sunspots come and go, but recently they have mostly gone. For centuries, astronomers have recorded when these dark blemishes on the solar surface emerge, only for them to fade away again after a few days, weeks, or months. Thanks to their efforts, we know that sunspot numbers ebb and flow in cycles lasting about 11 years. But for the past 2 years, the sunspots have mostly been missing. Their absence, the most prolonged for nearly 100 years, has taken even seasoned sun watchers by surprise. This is solar behavior we haven't seen in living memory, said David Hathaway, physicist at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama. Let's tie all this together with a special running tomorrow night, June 19th, on National Geographic, Electronic Armageddon.
The nuclear warhead will detonate high above the Earth's surface, and people on the ground will not feel a thing. Powerful electromagnetic waves destroy electrical circuits. one of the most wired nations in the world will go dark. This plane is especially designed to survive an EMP. It may be one of the only means of communication you, as Commander-in-Chief, will have to your military forces. In a matter of months, our 21st century technology-driven world will be catapulted back to a non-electrified time. This is the worst-case scenario, but one that could happen on your watch. With the fate of millions resting in your hands, will you be prepared for the aftermath? To make the right decisions, you need to know more about electromagnetic pulses, how they work, the damage they incur, what you should not be scared of, and what you should. To help you separate the physics from the fiction is a briefing led by physicist Richard Muller.
An EMP bomb is a bomb that's designed to go above the atmosphere.
And you're releasing suddenly all this huge energy. A few percent of that energy is in the form of gamma rays. Gamma rays are essentially X-rays that have much greater energy. You take an X-ray, which is maybe 10,000 volts of energy, and instead give it 1,000,000 volts of energy, and we call it a gamma ray. These gamma rays then spread out. They'll hit to the horizon.
When the gamma rays hit the atmosphere, they bump into nitrogen and oxygen molecules, knocking off electrons and creating electric current in space.
Electrons moving through a wire, what we call an electric current. Electrons moving through space are an electric current in space.
As this current moves through the Earth's magnetic field, it emits microwaves that strike the surface with an intense surge of power.
That's what makes it so damaging, the fact that it's coming in a very narrow pulse.
In less than a billionth of a second, the electrical intensity on Earth's surface becomes so hot, microchips fry. Power lines overload, and the electric grid collapses.
Everything with microelectronics in it stops. Your car, your computer, the subway, there's no electricity. If you think about it, if you don't have any electricity, you don't have anything in our infrastructure, do you?
It would change the game. It would change the world order.
Look around you and imagine what life would be like in a world without power. It's an electronic Armageddon.
Indeed, it is. They call it a game changer. If they say it would change the world order, they use the terms Armageddon. These things aren't accidental. They know exactly what they're doing. Of course, Peter Coyote narrating there. Narrator du jour. We have another one from National Geographic. Moon has 100 times more water than thought. Ocean's worth of water estimated in interior. Is it a total game changer? Again, using that same terminology. We've also just heard that terminology used in regards to the supposed new discovery of the mineral resources in Afghanistan. Of course, more on that on upcoming episode 174. We also go over it on the most recent New World Next Week. FCC eyes first step towards broadband regulation. More on that from Computer World. But from threat level, Supreme Court says officers texting not private. The Supreme Court said Thursday a California police officer's privacy was not breached when his superiors read transcripts of hundreds of his text messages. The Ontario Police Department was looking at the transcripts as part of an effort to determine whether it was providing an adequate quota of monthly pager text to its officers. The SWAT officer, Jeff Quon, Q-U-O-N, was exceeding the limit for months, and his superiors wanted to know why. Quon was originally paying the extra fees out of his own pocket. He sued after the inquiry, alleging his privacy was violated. Many of the text messages were sexually explicit. But if he was doing it on the company phone, what reasonable expectation of privacy would you have there? Finally, on cyberspacewar.com and on this B-side episode 173 from MediaMonarchy.com, you've heard of the TED Talks before. These high-tech, really pretty cool and informative talks. They also have an unfortunate amount of folks like Bill Gates talking about depopulation and flying vaccines, flying syringes, if you will. Again, the eugenics agenda. This video is about 15, 16 minutes long, and we're just going to listen to the first few minutes, because, of course, the audio isn't going to do it for you. You have to check this video out. John Underkoffler, one of the science advisors for the Steven Spielberg science fiction film Minority Report, gave a fascinating TED Talk in February in which he demonstrated a computer interface much like the one he helped design for the film Minority Report. The first 5 minutes are background information about the technology and how far it's come. That's kind of what we're going to hear. 6 minutes in is where the demonstration of the new system begins. John Underkoffler answers questions at the end of the talk, and he insists that the technology cannot be for corporations alone. It must be useful for the general public as well. This is also a total game changer. This is pretty much what every futuristic new computer interface you've seen looks like. You're essentially in the computer, and you with your arms are manually moving things around on the screen and dragging and moving and stretching and pinching and doing all those things. So again, I would say you should really watch the video. And for that and so many reasons more, that's why we're doing cyberspacewar.com. That's why we're doing foodworldorder.com. That's why we do mediamonarchy.com. For all the alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups that you can handle. Again, this is how we're going to go out. We're going to listen to the clip from John Underkoffler displaying this new Minority Report-style computer interface. Stay tuned for a jam-packed episode 174. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, reminding you, as always, don't hate the media. Become the media. Take care.
26 years after the advent of the Macintosh, which was an astoundingly seminal event in the history of human-machine interface and in computation in general, it fundamentally changed the way that people thought about computation, thought about computers, how they used them, and who and how many people were able to use them. It was such a radical change, in fact, that the early Macintosh development team in 82, 83, 84 had to write an entirely new operating system from the ground up. Now, this is an interesting little message, and it's a lesson that has since, I think, been forgotten or lost or something, and that is, namely, that the OS is the interface. The interface is the OS. It's like the Land and the King and Arthur. They're inseparable. They are one. And to write a new operating system was not a capricious matter. It wasn't just a matter of tuning up some graphics routines. There were no graphics routines. There were no mouse drivers. So it was a necessity. But in the quarter century since then, we've seen all of the fundamental supporting technologies go berserk. So memory capacity and disk capacity has been multiplied by something between 10,000 and a million. Same thing for processor speeds. Networks, we didn't have networks at all at the time of the Macintosh's introduction. And that has become the single most salient aspect of how we live with computers. And of course, graphics. Today, $84.97 at Best Buy buys you more graphics power than you could have gotten for $1 million from SGI only a decade ago. So we've got that incredible ramp up. Then on the side, we've got the web and increasingly the cloud, which is fantastic, but also in the regard in which an interface is fundamental, kind of a distraction. So we've forgotten to invent new interfaces. Certainly, we've seen in recent years a lot of change in that regard, and people are starting to wake up about that. So what happens next? Where do we go from there? The problem, as we see it, has to do with a single simple word, space, or a single simple phrase, real-world geometry. Computers and the programming languages that we talk to them in, that we teach them in, are hideously insensate when it comes to space. They don't understand real-world space. It's a funny thing, because the rest of us occupy it quite frequently and quite well. They also don't understand time, but that's a matter for separate talk. So what happens if you start to explain space to them? One thing you might get is something like the luminous room. Luminous room is a system in which it's considered that input and output spaces are co-located. It's a strangely simple and yet unexplored idea, right? When you use a mouse, your hand is down here on the mouse pad. It's not even in the same plane as what you're talking about. The pixels are up on the display. So here was a room in which all the walls, floors, ceilings, pets, potted plants, whatever was in there, was capable not only of display, but of sensing as well. And that means input and output are in the same space, enabling stuff like this. That's digital storage in a physical container. The contract is the same as with real-world objects and real-world containers. It has to come back out, whatever you put in. This little design experiment that was a small office here knew a few other tricks as well. If you presented it with a chessboard, it tried to figure out what you might mean by that. And if there was nothing for them to do, the chess pieces eventually got bored and hopped away. The academics who were overseeing this work thought that that was too frivolous, so we built deadly serious applications like this optics prototyping workbench, in which a toothpaste cap on a cardboard box becomes a laser. The beam splitters and lenses are represented by physical objects, and the system projects down the laser beam path. So you've got an interface that has no interface. You operate the world as you operate the real world, which is to say with your hands. Similarly, a digital wind tunnel with digital wind flowing from right to left. Not that remarkable in a sense. We didn't invent the mathematics, but if you displayed that on a CRT or a flat panel display, it would be meaningless to hold up an arbitrary object, a real-world object, in that. Here, the real world merges with the simulation. And finally, to pull out all the stops, this is a system called ERP, for urban planners, in which we give architects and urban planners back the models that we confiscated when we insisted that they use CAD systems, and we make the machine meet them halfway. It projects down digital shadows, as you see here. And if you introduce tools like this inverse clock, then you can control the sun's position in the sky. That's 8 a.m. shadows. They get a little shorter at 9 a.m. There you are, swinging the sun around. Short shadows at noon and so forth.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
It's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
Say out on my threat.
And that concludes our program for tonight.
Yep. This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.